Hello and welcome to the Nanofilm Improv Podcast. I'm Dave Herron. This podcast is about my trials and tribulations associated with improv comedy and doing it, performing it, rehearsing it. So this is really a cathartic outpouring of the things that I've learned, the things that I'm struggling with, and an opportunity to share with you and hear from you also some of the things that have worked for you. And equally, there'll be some things on this podcast that you have tried that don't work for you. It's all very subjective. My experience level is, well, I've had a few years experience doing improv. I've taught a bit of improv. I've performed with a whole range of exciting and talented improvisers and learnt from sets that have gone well and sets that haven't gone well. And this is all part of an evolution for me as well. So you're very welcome in joining me on this podcast. So today I wanted to talk about how I have tried to take my improv to the next level. Things I have tried to think about when I've been doing improv that help bring it up a notch or two. And this follows discussion with a co-improviser and good friend of mine, George Butcher, prior to doing a short form course with the wonderful Dingbats group in Hawley and the Crawley area. And if you like improv, and if you like performing, and if you like meeting just good, fun, collaborative people, then I strongly encourage you to visit dingbatsimprov.com and go and check out some of the shows, some of the classes there as well. It's a real friendly bunch, and I've made a lot of very good friends there doing that. So there was a course that George and I were running, and prior to that course, we were thinking about how do we take some of these experienced improvisers and get them to take this up a notch, take it up a level or two in terms of their improv ability. And the three things that we found ourselves focusing in on were essentially the IPA, I think. And we can't take that. I think the course students took that mnemonic on themselves. But essentially, IPA stands for Impressive, Playfulness, and Audience. What I'm going to do now is walk through each of those three points. When I think about being impressive, I'm thinking about doing something that an average audience member could not do. It has to be something that looks honed, skillful, that an ordinary member of the public couldn't get up on stage and necessarily do. And it really starts for me at the outset of coming on stage. So your introductions and your outroductions, I'm not sure if that's a word, but leaving the stage, have to be slick. I've seen some really, really great examples at Dingbats and at Hoobler and other courses I've been at where people have honed this specifically for the showcases, and it just looks really impressive when you're all coordinated coming on stage. Counter to that, I've also seen it where it hasn't worked well. I've also been guilty of this as well, where I haven't really been thinking about coming on stage when I've been doing it. I've just been in my head thinking about what I need to do. And as an audience member looking at that, it doesn't exude, I think, confidence or professionalism or slickness. So some of the showcases that I have seen and been part of have done this very, very well indeed. And the course that George and I took in 2023, the summer of 2023, basically worked a little bit on this. We had one class where we worked on this. And although I couldn't make the end of course showcase, I saw a video of it. And it was amazing. The students had themselves really thought about the introduction, how they came on stage and how they introduced themselves. I'll come on to that in a second. But they had come up with their own arrangement for coming on stage, and it looked coordinated. It looked impressive. And it basically said to the audience, you are now in for some entertainment, as opposed to a bit of a mishmash of people getting up on stage. It was really good, and it was really satisfying having coordinated and facilitated some of those classes to have been with a bunch of people who'd clearly gone away and thought about it and worked on it. It was fabulous. Then introducing the show also has to look slick as well. I've personally been in too many shows where I have not prepared well enough for introducing a set, and that has led me to over-explaining games, over-explaining who the group is, over-explaining what we were supposed to do. And that can fatigue, I think, an audience because it just looks underprepared. Where it has worked really well is where groups have prepared exactly what they're going to say, have prepared exactly how they're going to introduce the games without giving too much of the funniness away as well. So I just thought it was worth just starting with that aspect, because being impressive to an audience and looking different and looking a step above starts immediately as soon as you're walking on stage. It sets the tone. And then, of course, it's about what you're improvising itself. Again, am I doing something that the ordinary Joe public just simply cannot do? Now, this lends itself quite easily when you're maybe just doing a basic scene or a short form game where the pace, the quick thinkingness, the lack of listening probably shows and an audience member probably thinks, well, I could do that. And I think that's the worst situation to be in. I think improv should be impressive. I think it should be something that people look at and go, wow, I couldn't get up there and do that. So there has to be an element of triumphing, I think, over adversity. But there has to be some level of adversity. There has to be, I think, a bit of pace, a bit of ruthlessness about the improv as well, particularly when you think about short form games. But then when you're thinking about longer form and where there's, you know, a relationship or a narrative to be built or characterization, there should be some very good acting there as well. There should be good object work and there should be some really good reactions and emotions between the different characters. Again, an audience member leaving the show and thinking about how impressive a scene was or a relationship between two characters was is the kind of feeling I want people to go away thinking when they've seen me do an improv set. And the final thing I'd probably put under in being impressive is practice. Practice, practice, practice. I know that's a very cliched thing to say. And sometimes having to arrange practice when we've all got, you know, other things going on in our lives can be quite difficult. But practice really does take it up a level. I've seen a number of groups do different sets where sometimes it's quite clear that maybe they haven't met and spoken beforehand. And you can see that, as I said, in the introductions, in the way they get up on stage. But it can also be in the way they interact on stage as well. So practice sessions are absolutely key, specifically on what do you want to focus on in these practice sessions, not simply just running games or a, you know, type of improv set, but actually what are the bits that you really want to focus on? Is it the characters? Is it the relationships? Is it the intros? Is it the outros? Have a focus for the session. And that's really worked particularly well for me. And each time I come out of the rehearsal or the practice, I feel like I've taken it a step further in my learning through improv. So that's being impressive. The second one is then around being playful. I really think you've got to look like you're having fun on stage. When it doesn't work, and it's always easy to go to the ones where it doesn't work because it just feels so negative doing it, but it's an easier one to do, is when you just see people talking on stage. There's probably no emotion. Sometimes they're not even listening to the other person. They're just making their own things up. But it just looks like they're not having fun and they're kind of going through the motions. And that transmits, I think, to an audience member. If you don't look like you're having fun, why would an audience member have fun as well? And why should they? They've paid, probably, they've paid for a ticket, or they're at a free gig, but they're getting drinks in. Either way, they want to have fun, but they want to see you have fun. And as soon as you see a set where the improvisers are on stage and they are playing with each other, they're joking around, it doesn't break the scene, but what it does is it adds to the character's relationship as well. The audience getting stuck in as well, and they get involved as well. Now, I've been blessed having been in groups where there has been a real strong sense of playfulness, and that allows me to have fun with the other improvisers on stage. So I think about what the Comedy Store players would do. If there wasn't an audience there that turned up to see them perform at the Comedy Store, I'm pretty certain they would still go ahead anyway and just have fun with each other. So the groups I've been in the main have been very playful and been very jokey. But equally, I have been in fantastic groups where we've had very, very flat sets. I remember doing a gig at the Hawth in Crawley with some very good friends of mine in a set. Set called The group is called Slapbot, and we did a set, and we had practiced for about 4 or 5 weeks beforehand. And every practice, there had been proper belly laughs, and we really enjoyed doing the rehearsals. We'd really enjoyed creating these wonderful relationships, characters, scenes where they flowed from one to the other. It was felt seamless, it felt effortless, and all the time we were laughing at this, and we were creating amusement, and we felt very confident going on stage that that would work. But when it came to the set, for some reason or another, it was a totally different environment. I know this also leads to another question around, should you just rehearse or should you be on stage as well? Again, in those instances, I think it matters what your outlook is, and that's a topic for a separate discussion. But this set went really flat. We went on stage all in our head, which means we weren't thinking very much about having fun. We were just focused about putting in place all the right markers and the training that we had done to make sure that it ran smoothly. Now, the set itself was interesting. There were some good relationships, there were some good characters, but there were no laughs. And this was a set that needed to have laughs. It wasn't a improvised theatrical drama. This was a quite loose and fun set, and yet no one laughed, and we didn't laugh either. And the two, I think, are symbiotic. The audience to laugh has also got to feel that the players, the improvisers themselves, are having fun, and that didn't transmit across to the audience. So I think being playful is absolutely key to that. How do you keep it playful? What are the things you can do? Well, goodness me, I'm sure people could write theses on this. But essentially, in my mind, I think it's just trying to make the other person laugh on stage. Not breaking the fourth wall, not doing something that destroys the nature relationship. You're trying to make the other person laugh whilst being in character and keeping true to the sense of the relationship and the groundedness of the scene. But something that's going to make them laugh. Maybe it's a quirky characteristic that you have. Maybe it's some odd object work or a voice. I did one with some friends of mine at the London Improv Theatre. And I came on stage at the very, very beginning and just looked at the other improviser and said, "Which finger?" as I paraded all four of my fingers, not the thumb, on my left hand. "Which finger is it? Which one?" It was supposed to be weird. It was supposed to be quirky. And it was supposed to make the other improviser corpse. They did a fantastic job of holding it together. But she knew when she looked into my eye that we were going to have fun. And immediately she justified it and said, "It's the pinky. That's the one the ring goes on." And immediately the scene started. But my fellow improviser knew exactly what I was trying to do. I was trying to have fun. And the audience immediately knew as well. They started laughing. And we had set the tone for the scene. That, of course, didn't mean that we should neglect having to build strong characters and strong relationships. No, we did that. But it set the tone at the beginning and almost set a bit of a comfortableness, I think, with other improvisers to know, no, we're going to have fun here. No matter what else happens, we're going to have fun. So there are different ways that you can do that, as I said, quirky characteristic, odd object work, voices. But those are some things that work for me. Really keen to hear what works for you in being playful. But the feedback that I've had from audiences when those sets have gone well and where the characters have been quirky and weird and where they can see us having fun on stage, the feedback has been great. So I'd really encourage that. And the final piece is around audience. And in essence, for me, this one trumps both the playfulness and the impressiveness. In fact, it probably doesn't trump them. It's probably the wrong word to use. It is more of an umbrella over both of those. In essence, I think the audience sees everything. They see when two improvisers have characters who get on really, really well. They see when those characters don't get on really well. They see when there's improvisers that are dominating other improvisers. They see when there are improvisers who are on every single scene. They see other improvisers who've never come on stage as well. They see playfulness. They see reactions. They see characters who don't react to something continually. They see everything. And that's probably the reason why programs such as Gogglebox or Big Brother are such successes. Because we enjoy watching people. So that's my coverage of IPA, the impressive, the playfulness, and the audience aspects of doing improv. It mainly was for short form improv, but I reckon it could probably transpire across to other forms of improv as well. But I'm sure there are many, many things that have worked for you that you've thought, yes, that's one of my guiding principles. And I'd love to hear about it, whether it's worked for you, how you've evolved it, other things you may have given up on and thought, actually, that doesn't work for me. But those are the three guiding principles that have really worked for me recently and tried to take my improv to the next level. Now all I've got to do is put it into practice and hone it, and let's see how long that takes. So thanks very much for listening to the Nano Nano Film Improv Podcast, and I'll catch you in the next one.